Welcome to the Bowden Education Autumn Podcast Series, where we talk to a range of people making a significant contribution to education. Our podcasts are informal and aim to inspire you, lift you up, and get you thinking. Today, I'm delighted to be chatting to Andy Taylor, known to many as Mr. T's NQTs, picking his brains about the ECT years. Andy was a teacher and senior leader in primary schools before moving into teacher education at the University of Worcester, where Andy, in addition to contributing to teacher education programmes, has a focused role on mental development and ECT support. I also have the privilege of co-hosting Bowden Education's monthly ECT network with Andy, which we'll chat about later. Welcome, Andy.
Catherine, lovely to be here with you. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start by finding out a little bit about you. Can you talk to us and share with us a little bit about your career to date?
So I think you kind of captured a lot of it in a nutshell. So I started teaching about 20 years ago now in schools in Gloucestershire, and worked in that area, and then I think about 6 years in picked up my first role as an NQT mentor, and that's where that kind of love of supporting people in their early career teachers really started for me. I did that then for 10 years in different schools, picking up NQTs at different points, as they were called back then, and ended up mentoring about 17 in that 10-year time. By the end of my time in primary schools, I was as a deputy head and done that role for 6 years. I decided I needed a new challenge, and then looked to as to what would inspire me further. And that work with NQTs and those in the early stages of their teaching career really kind of spoke to me. So then moved that transition into initial teacher education with the University of Worcester, and loving every minute of it. Really good.
So that leads me on to think, you've been in education 20 years. Lots of people don't make it that far now. What inspires you to continue working within education?
I think initially it was always about that impact on pupils and seeing pupils kind of develop and flourish. And then it became seeing teachers develop and flourish, and knowing that actually, you know, everybody needs their champion, whether you're a teacher, a child, or everything. You need somebody that's going to kind of believe in you and put that faith in you. And I've always found that something I've enjoyed doing, and that sense of everybody can achieve and everybody can get better, everybody can kind of improve. And it's just that investment in people that I've really enjoyed, kind of seeing them then flourish, seeing them kind of develop as a teacher, growing in their confidence and their skills, and then watching them innovate and then going on to supporting others. So my very first NQT actually works at the university alongside me as a lecturer there. So it's that investment in people that allows people to kind of to go on and then make a further impact. So that constant like trickle down effect, which is just, incredible, really.
That must be really nice, having them work alongside you, but also slightly weird.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And do they reflect? Have you ever had a conversation about their NQT experience when you were supporting them, or have they not divulged their thoughts on that?
Just don't mention it at all. It's interesting. I worked with them for this. I stayed in the same school as them for about 4 or 5 years, and ended up kind of just working, teaching kind of parallel alongside them for a long time. And often we kind of sit and reflect and kind of share those experiences, and occasionally attend some of the training courses together. And it's always fascinating to hear from that other perspective, and other NQTs that I've mentioned have gone on to be deputy heads and things like that. Often they'll get back in touch and they'll kind of say like, oh, you've always believed in me. Thank you very much for that. This is kind of where I am. Would you write a reference for me? Would you be able to talk about these sorts of things? And, you know, that, again, that contact that you have and those relationships that you build, that investment in people, you know, it's just, yeah, it's incredible, really. But you're right, it's nice sometimes just to sit back and reflect on those kind of shared experiences to where you are now.
Yeah. And so this morning, I really want to pick your brains about being an ECT. And I think whilst we probably, those people listening, understand maybe an ECT themselves, I think there's still a lot of confusion as to the entitlement, what's expected, lots of questions floating around. And I know you pick up huge numbers of those because you're tagged into all of those kind of questions on Twitter. So, and you do an awful lot of work in both in your day job, but also on Twitter to support early career teachers. But what to you is an ECT in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, it's that anybody, I think, in their early stages of their teaching career. So the term ECT is used for those in their first and second years of teaching, as it's kind of more formal kind of bracket. So anybody in first and second year of teaching, they're labelled as an ECT, an early career teacher. But that concept of being an early career teacher, I think, does span into initial teacher education. So anybody kind of developing and learning their craft before achieving QTS. And equally, I think those beyond, I don't think you, even 3-4 years in, I think, you know, if we're thinking about a 40-year career, you're still very early in your teaching career. And I think there's that continued development throughout that time. But, you know, the term ECT does particularly relate to those 2 years, but I think it does span kind of a greater kind of width of years than its official label does.
I would agree completely. I think it does encapsulate the right from the beginning of their career, being their first day on their teacher education program, be that an undergraduate or PGCE. So that's when their early career starts. And I think I completely agree. I don't think the early career ends at the end of that 2 years in school. I think it carries on at least, I would say, if you're looking for a time frame, at least to the end of year five.
I agree. And I think the principle behind the early career framework and the ECT being made 2 years was that recognition of, you know, that historically that NQT year being 1 year, and then it was kind of like, right, that's it, you're on your own. Yeah. There's that continued sense of investment in there, which I think is really valuable, but I think it still needs to continue. Mm. You know, we're all very aware of that, you know, retention of teachers, that, you know, 30% go within the first 5 years. With continuing that investment in people kind of throughout that time, that continued CPD, that continued nurture, that investment in them will pay dividends in the future if we can keep that investment going.
And of course, you're going to come across situations for many years that are your first time of coming across that. So it's that having someone to go to. So what can an ECT though expect, thinking about those first 2 years, what can they expect from their first 2 years in school?
So as an early career teacher entering your kind of getting your first job, starting a school, whether that be January, Easter, September, wherever you are in your application cycle, you should be given a named mentor and a named induction tutor, and they hold similar but slightly different roles. Both of them can signpost CPD to you, both of them can invest in you and are there to support you. Your mentor, is their role is very much to deliver the early career framework materials and support you with that early career framework development. So they will be doing weekly low stakes observations of you, focused on whatever the content is of the early career framework that's being focused on in that module that you're studying at the moment. Your induction tutor, their role is more of an assessment, or I don't want to use the word judgment, but ultimately that's what they do. They will make those judgments to get a view against the teacher standards, but equally they are still there to support you to gain wider CPD beyond the early career framework. And I think sometimes that early career framework is a good batch of CPD, but it's not the only CPD that, you know, early career teachers may need. And while you are looking at a specific module, it's very focused on a particular content. So behavior management is the module being covered at the moment by those starting their first year. But actually, there may be wider CPD that you need. Perhaps you've got pupils in there with very specific needs that might need more focused support. And so it's seeking that wider opportunity. So there may be pedagogical approaches you're looking to develop that you need to be able to go out into the wider school and actually beyond your school to be able to observe and to interact with others and gain from other situations. So that's your induction tutor's role, to go beyond the ECF for that wider CPD. They'll also, like I said, make that judgment of you against the teacher standards, and you'll have two formal assessment points, one at the end of the first year and one at the end of the second year, where that final decision is made of whether you're meeting the teacher standards. In between those, on the terms when you're not having those formal assessments, you've got progress review points, where a form is completed and then an indication is made as to your trajectory against the teacher's standards at that point. And again, identifying strengths, areas for development, and celebrating kind of the progress that you're making, but also thinking, okay, how can we support you and develop you further? And then as an ECT, then your entitlement in the first year is you'll receive a 10% reduction in your timetable, which for primary colleagues is slightly easier. It tends to be half a day. For secondary colleagues, it's always quite a complicated formula that they use. It's a 10% reduction in line with another teacher in your school who doesn't hold any management responsibilities. Whatever the norm is for teachers in your school that don't hold any responsibilities, you should have 10% less than they do. And obviously that varies from school to school. It depends on how many sessions a day they have, or, you know, so it's quite a complicated one, but it should always be that 10% less. And that's for you to engage in the early career framework, but also in that wider CPD opportunities as well.
Yeah, and that 10% is on top of the 10% PPA that staff already get. So all staff members would get that. And then so as an ECT, essentially you have 20% remission time for planning, preparation and engaging with your ECT, the early career framework and so on.
Exactly, and that's it. And then go on,
you carry on and then I'll follow up.
That's all right, yeah. In the second year, there's a slight reduction in that and it comes down to 5% of a reduced timetable. And schools then manage that in very different ways. I've spoken to schools where some will be given an hour a week to engage in that, some will be given half a day a fortnight, some will even be given a day a month, depending on how that works. So there isn't a specific kind of structure for that. It can be the flexibility of the school to make sure that that happens at the discretion of the school and to be able to fit in with how their workload works. But it's really important that you still have that time in your second year.
Because you're still engaging with the early career framework and there'll still be a support, things that you need to engage with. So you need that time anyway for that.
Exactly.
So that's really important for ECTs that are listening,
yeah,
or for those people listening that are currently in teacher education and will be looking to move into their first role, to just check that they are getting their entitlement of remission for being an ECT and that it isn't taken away. And I think that's really important, that it's ring fenced and it can't be taken away because there's a meeting they need to go to. It is remission.
It is in its protected time. And I often get asked about this, that, you know, we're on a school trip that day, should I be having my ECT time back? Absolutely, yes, you should, because it is a statutory time. And it's, you know, there may be, you know, you may need to be flexible in school, particularly if you're in a very small school, that ability to adapt very quickly may not be there to give you the back kind of immediately, but you should be seeking to, you know, receive that time. As Catherine said, you know, it's there to protect your time to engage with the ECF materials and develop your own professional development. So it is there to protect. It is protected time, but always, yes, absolutely, you should always seek it back. The other question I often get asked is about if you're going on training days, where does that fit in? Well, actually, because the ECT time is protected to engage with your CPD, if you're going on a training course, actually that's an effective use of your ECT time because it's an investment in your CPD. So you wouldn't gain that time back in that sense because it's your CPD investment, not just you're off on a school trip or you're being pulled to a random meeting here because you need to be able to represent the views. Mm-hmm. It is that CPD, so that would fall under that ECT time.
Yeah, and if you feel that you're not, or you've got questions about it, that's when you should really have a chat to your mentor. That would be a mentor type question, not your tutor.
The induction tutor ultimately holds responsibility for the programme that you're in, so your induction. And this is where I think there still is a slight confusion that the ECT induction and the ECF materials run parallel. They're not the same. They are kind of mutually exclusive things. So the mentor's focus role is on the ECF, really. However, they can engage with other CPD with you. If it's an issue with your induction, so things like not getting your ECT time, then it would be your induction tutor that would hold that responsibility in that role and that way. If you are continually not getting that time, or you don't feel you're meeting your expectations, then the next port of call above that would be the appropriate body. And they are the people that all the paperwork goes off to. They're appointed by the DfE to be able to sign off paperwork. They also undertake QA and often will be a delivery partner for whichever ECF materials that you're using. But there should be a named contact for you, either that they've been in touch to kind of signpost you where meetings are, or their name should be given to you, and you can contact them to seek support. And that's part of their role as well, as to support you as an ECT, as well as supporting the school with the process of ECT induction.
Yeah, and it is quite complex. You've got these different roles, who's to go to for what, and so on. Another question I often see, or indeed have been asked in the past, is can you start your ECT at any point in the year, firstly? So it doesn't have to be September. Yes. So you can. Yeah. But this is the more complex one, is for those people that either start in a school and then things aren't working out in that school and they look to move, or have taken up sort of a term supply. Can they embark on the start? Can they start counting off, if you like, a term or whatever of their ECT 2-year program?
Yes. So as long as you know that you are there for at least a whole term, you can start early career teacher induction. You can't, so the things that wouldn't apply. So if you were, say, you started a long-term supply of a half term, and then at the end of that, towards the end of that first half term, the head teacher comes along and says, okay, well, actually now, you know, that member of staff isn't returning, we can extend it now to the full term. That can't be counted retrospectively.
Right.
So that wouldn't count. However, if you start off and say you're here for a whole term, then yes, you should have your ECT provision put in place for you. If, as Catherine said, you know, you've started that journey in a school and, you know, you maybe you've got to that first half term and thinking, not quite sure, you know, you do that first term and you think, actually, I don't really feel this is the right school for me. And absolutely, you know, countless people, yeah, I know have been in that situation, and that's absolutely fine. I think it's not thinking teaching isn't for me, it's actually thinking, is this the right environment for me, the right setting for me? And just because it's not the right setting for you doesn't mean it's not the right setting for somebody else. But it's about, if you get to that point, as long as you've completed a whole term, that's then banked and secured, and that will be taken off your the rest of your ECT induction period. So we're looking at that 2 years, mm-hmm, you've done one term out of six effectively. You can then pick up the next five terms wherever you go. If for some reason, depending on the way your contract works, you do a term and a half, can fill in an interim form, and that half term can be counted, but it has to be done as an interim form to be able to kind of secure that amount of time that then can be carried forward with you, and then you can continue that in the next school that you go into. I do say that, you know, technically you can complete your ECT induction in six different schools doing a term in each. I would not advocate it, because I don't think you'd give yourself the best opportunity to meet the standards in that way, but in theory, yes, you could do it that way.
And if someone was to say do a term supply, or employed for a term and leaves and then has a break, so they don't immediately get supply or don't immediately go into another job, how long a break? Is there a rule? I don't know. Is there a rule about how long a break could you have? So you banked that term, but then is there a point in which you say, no, actually, you need to start again?
There isn't, that provision isn't made in the guidance at all. So if you were to do a term and then 2 years later you pick it up again, that term is still banked and secured for you. The only slight, it is interesting, because I often get asked this, and there's a misconception about 5 years, that your QTS only lasts you for 5 years if you don't start induction. That's not true at all. You could go and work overseas for 15 years and then come back to, having never completed induction, having worked overseas in a non-British school, you could then come back to the UK and pick up induction at that point. Your QTS doesn't expire. The five-year confusion comes from short-term supply. So the caveat in the guidance states that you can only undertake short-term supply for 5 years before completing induction. So if you haven't completed your induction within 5 years, you can no longer do short-term supply roles after that 5 years. But it doesn't mean you can't pick up a full-time teaching job or a long-term supply role, but you have to start your induction at that point.
Okay, so you can only dip in and out of the day kind of supply,
yeah,
or the week hither and thither supply for 5 years. Otherwise, yes, you kind of essentially lose your QTS status. But
you don't lose a QTS status, but yeah, you have to start induction. So you can't continue to do short-term supply, but you could pick up, say, a part-time one-day-a-week job and then do supply alongside that.
Right.
So it's...
But if I suddenly found myself 7 years down the line and I've only, you know, so I did my PGCE, say, at Worcester.
Yeah.
Then for whatever reason, I found myself 7 years of doing short-term day here, day there supply for 7 years. Can I now say, oh, actually, from January, I'm going to pick up my ECT, start my ECT?
Yes. So in theory, you shouldn't have got to 7 years, because somebody should be keeping an eye on on that, because you, I feel like I said, it's that maximum of 5 years. It's one of those things that I've never known it enforced,
right?
Because I've never known anybody in that position. Most people do tend to pick up kind of the more full-time or the, yes, kind of permanent or longer term roles before that point. But yeah, you would get to 5 years, and then you could, if you then did, okay, 5 years of supply, actually, I'm not going to secure a job, I'm going to go and, you know, pick up a role as a teaching assistant, for example, or HRTA, and then picked up a teaching job, that would be absolutely fine. So effectively, you could secure your QTS and then 20 years later start your teaching at that point. Historically, there used to be a return to teaching,
yes,
course, short-term course, yes, to return. That no longer exists. And so that's where, again, that it's the QTS that you've gained and you've earned, you've worked hard for, doesn't expire. So that's, okay, that
that's
is protected.
Yours to keep.
It is, absolutely, that is yours. It's about that engagement with induction when you, you know, during your teaching career, to be able to kind of secure that and then help you move forward. But yeah, the 5 year rule comes into effect when it's short term supply. But you could teach in the independent sector your entire career and, yeah, never complete induction.
Yes. Or in the international sector.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, but as well, I think just thinking of it logistically and offering advice, it's not a great strategy to have many years out, because that's when we do. And in my previous role in teacher education, we have had periodically contact from people that say, do you do a return? Because it's not just about having to do a return. They lack confidence because they've only been doing supply, or they took up a TA role for so many years, and they feel that they want a refresher, and that really isn't funded or available anymore. So don't leave it so long.
When you're talking about those kind of those gaps, I think it depends on what you're doing in those gaps as well when you're looking to apply for roles. And often I get ECTs panicking because they think, oh, I don't feel ready for, you know, they've completed their training, and for whatever reason that's personal to them, they don't feel ready to go into a teaching role at that point, and they're worried about damaging their career. And I think it depends on the kind of role. If, you know, something like a teaching assistant role, an HRTA role, PPA cover, that, you know, has that less kind of accountability to it, there's still accountability there, but not quite as full as a class teacher's role, that as long as you're demonstrating the impact it's had on you, what you've gained from it and how it's supporting you, I think it can still be a really valuable experience to share and support you in those applications for a full-time teaching position further down the line.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to circle back a little bit now to a response from one of your previous questions, because I know that people will ECTs worry about this, and we do, again, it's some of the questions that I know we see on Twitter. Failing your ECT, now that's a worry. People even start worrying about this when they're on their teacher training. So can you fail it? At what point can you fail it? Or what are the situations if you get to the end point and you are not meeting the standards? What are the options? There are many questions there for you, but they're kind of all wrapped up together.
Yeah, I remember when I started my teacher training, there was no induction, And it was introduced, I was the first year to have to do the formal 1 year induction. And the way, like you said, the wave of panic that went through our course, oh my good Lord, what's going on here? We've come into this and we could still fail at some other point.
Not done yet.
Yeah, absolutely. It is very rare. Like I said, 17 NQTs I'd supported, none of them ultimately failed their NQT year. There were points where some were at risk of not meeting the standards, and that's where that you can still receive that. So at the moment, in your assessment points that you have, so you have the two formal assessment points, the one at the end of each year, and those progress reviews. In those progress reviews, it could be that, you know, it is identified that you're at risk of not meeting the standards. Mm-hmm. That can be feel a bit of a blow. But what that should mean is then the school and the appropriate body put more support in place for you to help you get there. The onus then becomes on the school to support you in getting you back on track to meeting the standards. Obviously, yes, there is an amount of work that you're going to have to do. You're going to have to, you know, accept that support and utilize it and use it to move your practice forward. But ultimately, it's about then getting you support. You have not failed that term. So, for example, you know, using the conversation we were talking about earlier, if you were doing a long-term supply for a term from September to December, and at the end of that, they said, oh, actually, we have some, you know, there is a concern you may not be on track to meet the standards at that point, then you have still banked that term. You have not failed that term. You don't have to repeat it. And you cannot fail your early career teacher induction until the end. Which feels end of year two, which does feel a bit like I'm going to go through all this year two and then suddenly I'm going to find out I failed at the end. Those progress review points and that assessment at the end of year one should mean there are no surprises. Mm. And when you sit down to those meetings, there shouldn't be any surprise conversations happening there that you aren't aware of. So chances are, if there is that conversation about not being on track to meet the standards, you will have known about that previously. And when I've had to do that with NQTs, and I have had some that have been at that position for sometimes reasons outside of their control, you know, it's about having that conversation really early on. So when that meeting comes, it's about, okay, look, this is where we are. We're capturing this point in time. It's a snapshot of where you are at the moment. It's not saying this is where you're going to end up. Mm-hmm. It's actually, we're going to do a lot to support you. So yes, so you can't fail until the end. What I always signpost and I used to print a copy for my NQTs. I used to give them a copy of the appeals procedure guidance, because it's one of those documents that you hope you never need, but you need to know is there to support you, because it talks about how you can best support yourself. So if you get to the point where you are at risk of not meeting the standards, or you get to the end and it's becoming clear that you are going to fail, and it won't, because, you know, like I said, a lot of experience, 17 years and 17 NQTs, and none of them that got to that point, that you know the process that you can go through to appeal that decision and what sort of evidence you can be gathering along that pathway in order to, if that decision is made at the end, then you can, then you've got everything you need to be able to support you and to be able to challenge effectively and to know what's coming up. But it is, like I said, it's not going to be a bolt out of the blue at that point. There will be a clear indication of this is the trajectory that you're on, so you will know. But like I said, it's highly unlikely. And, you know, I know there was a lot of concern over it going to 2 years, that people were worrying about 2 years of extra judgment, extra pressure. But actually, it gives you 2 years to be able to complete induction rather than it used to be the one.
Yes. So you've got longer to develop, and if you're struggling in certain areas, you've got longer to access support, EPD, yes, and develop. The only, I suppose, if there is a surprise, that's when you invoke the appeal. So if, yes, all of your progress reviews and year one assessment points have been all positive, and then suddenly this is kind of muted towards the end. Now, that's extremely rare, and even more rare than people not passing. But occasionally, for whatever reason, and it could be a change in personnel perhaps sometimes, or a change in culture in a school across the time, that's when you reach for your appeal document and say, well, I had no idea.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing at that point is, if you are getting to that point, you would, hopefully you're already in a union, but that was when you would speak to your union as well, and they will be able to guide you and offer that support, because sometimes it can mean just having an advocate at your meetings for you to be able to take those things on, because it can be quite an emotional time if you feel you are, if you have been kind of advised that you're not at risk, or you are at risk of not meeting the standards by the end. Sometimes you're not in a place to be receptive to what else is being said in that meeting. So having an advocate there from a union can be really supportive. So, you know, hopefully you're in a union anyway, but if not, that would be a point where you would also reach out to your union and say, look, I've had this conversation, I've looked at the appeals guidance, what other advice and support can you offer me? And then that will always be forthcoming. And again, the appropriate body will be there to support as well, to be able to guide and support.
Okay, so essentially all of it's formative.
It is.
Until the end point.
Yeah.
And if you are flagged as having on potentially not meeting the standards, I would always say to people, don't take it sort of to heart as if you're failing. Don't interpret it as if you're failing, because all this is an indicator. We're all developing, and we'll all always have areas for development. So your subject knowledge might be really strong, but your behavior management and behavior for learning strategies might be your weaker point. But be open to that at that point. So don't shut down and bury your head in the sand and be quite negative and defensive. It's at that point you take it away, have your sort of moment, because it is disappointing and you do feel frustrated, cross, angry, sad, all of those emotions. But then go back in and schedule a meeting with your mentor and your tutor and say, how can I, you know, what can I do?
And as you said, you know, there can be many reasons why this happens, and it could be, you know, you've gone from teaching year five to teaching EYFS, you know, there could be a myriad of reasons why there's a kind of a dip in your progress against the standards, because you're, you know, or you're moving schools. And it's a lot of ECTs are always surprised how exhausting it is kind of starting at a new school, because there's so much new information coming at you. You know, you're having to learn, sometimes almost feels like a new language, the terms that schools use for different things, and you know, new systems, new processes, new people, new children. There's so many pieces of information that come at you in that time. It's full on, and actually that can, you know, a dip in your performance, because it's just that extra burden that's coming at you at that moment in time. But like as Catherine said, don't take it personally, accept the support, ask for support and reach out. And one thing I will say to you, regardless, this is my biggest piece of advice I always say, is if you are finding things tough, talk to somebody. So many ECTs, NQTs that I work with, and this is, I feel, a real benefit of the current system now, with that mentor and induction tutor role being separated, that the mentor shouldn't have any impact on that judgments against the standards. Whereas as an NQT mentor previously, you had both those roles. You had that role of support and that role of judgment. And often NQTs, and I would always say at the start, you know, you'd be honest with me. Yes, I know I'm coming in and I'm going to be making those judgments against the standards, but also I will support you. I will be your champion. I will help you get there. But I need to know when you're finding things difficult. And I think it's very early on, because that relationship isn't there. They don't know you very well. Often NQTs would not volunteer things, would not tell me things, because they have that fear of that judgment rather than reaching out for support. And the amount of times you would pick things up and they would just be then in tears. They would have those breakdowns. And, you know, out of all the 17 NQTs I mentored, only one of them didn't cry at me at some point during the year, because it's full on, and things do get on top of you at times. But always reach out for support. If you know you're finding something tricky, ask for that support. It will always be given. But, you know, you have to be open and transparent about that. And I always say it's much easier to catch somebody as they're falling than it is to kind of lift them back up off the ground again. So please, please, please reach for support.
Yeah. And also, I think it's really important to acknowledge, and whilst it doesn't look like this for some people when you're very new in your career, when you look at more experienced members of staff, it looks like it's easy, and it should be easy for you too. But actually, those experienced members of staff do reach out for support as well within their own communities, networks, within their school, beyond their school as well. We're all doing it. It doesn't matter. You know, you've said you've been teaching in education for 20 years. I think I'm nearer 26 years or something, and I still learn and reach out and ask for advice all the time, not just occasionally, regularly.
And as you said, you know, those experienced teachers are constantly kind of developing those networks and those systems of support to be able to have, you know, kind of to draw on that kind of collective expertise when you need it. You know, you said about, you know, kind of new experiences. And, you know, when I left school in that last year, I still had about 3 or 4 new things that happened to me. So, you know, that was 16 years into a primary teaching career, new things that I hadn't experienced before. You know, okay, this is something new, and you have to be able to seek that kind of support and advice from others to kind of get you through. And what I often find with ECTs is often they think they gain QTS, therefore now they have the expectation that they should be then perfect, or that the school will say, okay, well, you finished your teacher training, now you're ready, you know, you're a teacher. And nobody has those expectations of you, so don't have them of yourself either. You know, you are still learning. You should still be making mistakes, and almost not actively making mistakes, but actively trying out things that may lead to you making mistakes, because you want to hone your craft. You want to find strategies that work for you, work for the pupils that are in front of you. You know, it's about taking those risks, trying things out and learning, and knowing that that support network is around you to help you build and develop into the best teacher that you are capable of being.
And if you're safe and dull, of course you won't make mistakes because you're safe. And if you are innovating and bringing creativity to your craft as a teacher, you will sometimes make mistakes, and that's important to acknowledge. I'm going to ask just the final question on the fail, and then we're going to look at things that people can do proactively and positively. But I know the reason we're talking about this is I know this is where we get a lot of questions come through. So I get to the end of year two. There have been things flagged up, so that the school's done this absolutely right. They've put support in, but I'm just not going to meet the standards. Is that the end, or can I have an extension? What are my options?
Some caveats where an extension could be put in place, particularly if it's been for absence. Right. So you are entitled to a maximum of 30 days absence per year over the whole 2 years, so 60 days effectively, before an extension is be forced upon you, if that makes sense. If at risk of not meeting the standards, it's a little bit of a grey area. There can be a short-term extension, but realistically, if there is an opportunity being given within that time that has enabled you to meet the standards and you have not, then it's unlikely that there is going to be an extension there for you.
So essentially, I will be forced to extend my ECT year if I've had more than 30 days off in the year.
Yes, particularly if it's deemed that actually that time would be beneficial in supporting you meeting the standards.
That's a lot of time anyway.
It is, exactly. It's a huge amount of time. And, you know, we're talking about people, you know, possibly with a broken leg. You know, you've got 6 weeks that you're out of action for. You know, you can't be on school site. Health and safety won't allow you to be on school site in a full cast or things like that. So, you know, it's significant absence. It's not that, you know, bit of a tummy bug, bit of a flu in the winter. That's not going to make the big impacts.
Okay. And so though, if it's deemed that a short extension isn't going to happen, that is it. I can't go back and start my ECT year again somewhere else.
So no, induction is a one-shot deal. And that's the thing you have to kind of bear in mind, which is linking back something Catherine said earlier about finding the right school for you. And I advocate this so much through Twitter, and when you're looking for a job, finding the right school for you, you're effectively choosing a school that are going to judge you and support you. So choose a school that you are happy doing those two things with you, because ultimately, yes, they're going to make a decision. And if it's not the right school for you, don't see it as a sign of failing by choosing to look somewhere else, that actually what you're doing is you're giving yourself the best opportunity to be successful in the long term.
And of course, if you do get to that point and you haven't successfully met the standards, and you're still desperate to teach and want to invest in yourself and you're self-reflective, there are other options, you know, like to work in institutions that don't require the rubber stamp of that. Okay, moving on to something now more proactive, and you can talk a bit and I'll join in about this. To me, when you start off in teaching, you feel that it's a bit of a tsunami of new things to learn, do, that you're chasing your tail a little bit. But I think it's never too early. And I wish I'd engaged earlier in my career in this, in hindsight, which is a wonderful thing. But I think building of networks, both internally, of course, your internal support networks from your colleagues, and even if you're in sort of collaborating schools, that's important. But look beyond to really gain differing perspectives and support beyond your school where you can take things. And as I said in the introduction, I co-host monthly ECT network that Bowden Education runs with you, which is open to all ECTs, primary, secondary, working in special schools, but also for student teachers, actually, because it's a really useful place to go. What do you think attending something like that is? So that runs monthly, you pop along, it's really informal, we sort of take questions, offer our sort of words of wisdom. Why is that so important? What can you benefit from that as an ECT or trainee teacher?
Any way of exposing yourself to other ideas, other people, those networks is a beneficial thing, even if it's sometimes, you know, you might have the opportunity to speak to them and think, actually, I wouldn't do it that way. And that's absolutely fine as well. You know, you can find ways of thinking, actually, I don't align with that and I wouldn't want to work in that way. But, you know, having that breadth of kind of experience to draw on, as Catherine said, you'll develop that within your own school. And I always talk about finding your tribe within a school, finding those people that not going to create an echo chamber, they're not going to tell you everything you're doing is marvelous and wonderful, but that are going to challenge you in a positive way. You know, they ignite you, they energize you about teaching. So branching out that network and looking at those wider networks that you can join into, so something like Bowden Network, for example, you can find others that you can connect with and think, actually, I think I could learn a lot from you. And actually, I think I could offer you something as well. You know, that shared kind of collective knowledge that can help you develop. It also can help you be energized about the role that you're doing. As I said, about finding your tribe, what you want to do is kind of engage with things that you think, actually, I love teaching and I want to speak to other people who also love teaching that are inspired to kind of go on to do better, because then that will inspire you to go on and be better. And it's about building that momentum that actually allows you to find ways then to have that kind of longer career, because you've got that sense of purpose, that sense of network, and also that self-efficacy that comes with that, that knowing by learning from others that actually gives you more confidence in you as an individual, and knowing that you can affect change and you can make a difference, that allows you then to kind of build that momentum and be genuinely really successful in your career.
Yeah, and I always think that it can be daunting, without a doubt. I do think that, but don't fear this. Feel that you can just rock up to one of these sessions and be fairly passive to begin with. You don't have to talk, you can pop in the chat, and or you can just sit back and watch. But I just think taking that first step is the hardest. In terms of bravery, if you find things a little bit daunting. But I do think it's revolutionary. And I think having absolutely your networks within your own school and within your own, if you're a student teacher, you know, within your own course is really, really important. And this isn't to replace that, but having that extra layer sort of out the edge is really important. And I think you can meet some really fantastic people where you can actually spark off ideas and say, do you know what, we're working on something similar, shall we work together? We might work at opposite ends of the country, but you know, we're all very good at technology now, and we can get together and do something. And that's where the excitement for me is, as well as saying, do you know what, I've sat and listened today and I go away and I feel that I'm not the only one that's struggling with X. So sometimes you can feel better in the fact that you're not on your own.
It's one of those things, I think, teaching.
quite a lonely job. And I know that sounds a really strange thing to say because you're surrounded by people all the time, but you're often in a classroom with children or young adults, and it's not the same. You don't get that interaction. So being able to find other adults to kind of to talk to kind of reach out to, as I said, to know that you're not alone in what you're experiencing. And, you know, COVID has, you know, had lots of negative impacts on our society. And, you know, I lead some ECF training, and actually sometimes those online sessions, not being sat in a room together, like the day conferences, not being in a room together, I don't think you don't get to have those informal conversations that you gain a lot from. But actually the benefit of COVID is it's developed a use of technology in such a way, you know, I would have never connected with Catherine in the same way, you know, initially without kind of this technology that we're using now to be able to support us. So I think COVID has some real benefits to it, and that ability to connect with people and bring in experts from across the country to that place to be able to listen to learn from, to gain ideas with, to be able to ask questions about very specific to your setting, just would have been unheard of previous to this. You know, you would have had to kind of travel huge distances. There's a huge cost implication, but you know, it's a much
but now more accessible we way. Sometimes just say, oh, let's have a catch up and a coffee. I don't think pre-COVID I've ever said that about let's go online and have a coffee. And I think that's great, because then you can just, you know, half an hour coffee and then reach out, how's things going with you, and you know, it ignites those kind of excitement. So definitely I would say my advice to trainee teachers, ECTs and any other teachers, actually head teachers, the lot, look at your networks, because they can be so enriching. Our next ECT network for November is on the 10th of the month, and we do them monthly, and we generally have a special guest. Sometimes we are the experts talking on a field. We're coming up soon, Andy, as having our own little bit. But in November, we've got David Gumbrell talking about resilience and a really important topic. So David will be quite happy to chat about it, but take, again, any questions that you have, and it's completely informal, not recorded, never going to go anywhere. So do come along and have a look at our website, and I'll put that in the podcast notes where you can access the book into those. Okay, last question about this before we just round up. You've got a book out in the new year.
I have. It's very exciting. I'm waiting for the final copy to arrive just to be able to say yes, it's all go. It's just really exciting, and I feel absolutely imposter syndrome being able to do this, but yeah, it is really exciting.
You shouldn't feel imposter, because you are Mr. T's NQTs. But the book is called You Can Do This, and you can pre-order it on Amazon. You can look on Bowden Education's like publications or book recommendation site and link to it from that. But it will be out in the new year. What can, and I've read it, so thank you for that, because I've done an endorsement for this book. So I have had a privilege of having a read through already. But what can ECTs expect? Why would sell it? It's your moment.
I think if you follow me on Twitter, then you'll kind of know what I do on there. It's about that positive support, being able to kind of signpost, being able to offer advice and guidance and things. And the book's allowed me to do it in more than 156 characters, I think it is, on Twitter. You're kind of restricted to. So it's allowed me to go into more depth and things. And it's a book that you can pick up at any point. If there are particular, it's grouped around particular areas that you might require more support with, you might want to just explore a little bit in more depth. But equally, you know, you can read through it chronologically as well. It was set up to help you understand that what is the expectations of you as an ECT and what you should be expecting, but also then that real kind of focused guidance and support on different areas that you may come across during the year. So, you know, the first parents evening, it's a chapter in there about working with parents and building those relationships with parents. If you're, you know, struggling with behaviour management, there's a chapter in there to support you with setting and establishing really clear expectations. So there's different things in there that you can dip in and out of at different points in time. But I've very much given it, structured it around that sense of this is my support and advice, but also opportunities for you to reflect as well. Yeah. And, you know, kind of coaching questions, just getting you to think about actually where's your point of knowledge at the moment? What is it you want to develop further? What do you know? And one of the things I was really, really pleased with and was able to do was to get kind of extracts, quotes, or reflections from ECTs that are out there at the moment, and to share
their experiences and their thoughts on the different focuses for each chapter. There's an ECT reflecting and sharing their experience, which is, you know, hugely beneficial, because you get, again, you get to know that it's not just you, and you can learn from each other as well.
Definitely. So keep a lookout for that. So in summary, it's really important to engage and understand the role of your mentor and your tutor, and know who your appropriate body is. Check that you're getting the remission time that you are entitled to, and that the progress review points are formative and supportive, as is the end of year one assessment point. So do take on board those pieces of advice and areas for improvement, and don't panic at that point. That's really important. Another thing, if you are an ECT or in your training years, we do have a podcast that we had out earlier in the autumn series, which is with Lakita Neal, who is herself an ECT and shares her experiences. So that might be worth looking at. So Andy, to round us up, two quick questions at the end. What's been your greatest achievement to date?
That's a really tricky one. I often get asked this question and doing things like this, and it always sounds quite trite almost, but actually it's knowing the impact I've made on others, and that awareness that actually there are teachers, head teachers out there, deputy head teachers, they're the lecturers that are doing what they're doing because of the impact that I've had on them, and that in them being their champion and helping them to support that, giving them the self-belief that they can do whatever they set out to do.
And is there an ambition you still hope to achieve in your career?
Oh, that's a good one. I think probably going forward is I would like to be able to do more to be kind of that voice, that advocate for ECTs, to be able to kind of continue to do that. And again, being the champion for every ECT out there, to be able to give them that opportunity to know that there's somebody there that's fighting to give them kind of what they deserve and the support that they should be having.
Brilliant. So thank you so much, Andy. You can follow Andy on Twitter on the handle at @MrTees_NQTs, and you can pre-order his book at any of your favourite or go-to booksellers. But as I say, if you can't find it, pop onto the Bowden site, www.bowdeneducation.org, and you can find it in our books there. And I hope it sells as it should. It's a great accompaniment to sit on the desk of every ECT so they can dip into it. So thank you so much for the chat today, Andy.
No, thank you very much, Kathy. It's an absolute pleasure.
Lovely. Thank you. See you soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.